Welcome to Women in WP,
a bi-monthly podcast about women who blog, design, develop, and more in the WordPress community.
Hi, Women in WP listeners. This is Tracy with a quick message from our sponsor, WP Remote. WP Remote is a dedicated care plan platform that will help fuel your agency's growth with maintenance care plans for your clients' websites. WP Remote provides an automated workflow for you to manage multiple sites from one central dashboard. With one-click updates, incremental backups, automated malware scans, firewall, uptime monitor, and more, WP Remote is created by the same great folks behind Blog Vault, Malcare, and Migrate Guru. Save time, increase your revenue, and make your clients happy by trying WP Remote today for free. Learn more at wpremote.com/womeninwp. And now, on to our show.
To the show. I'm Angela Bowman.
I'm Tracy Yap.
And I'm Amy Masson.
Our guest today is Lisa Sabin-Wilson, who co-owns a WordPress client service agency, Web Dev Studios, and is the COO and oversees project manager.
Hello.
Yay! episode by asking our guests to tell us about their journey to WordPress. How did you get started?
Oh, I'm going to date myself on some of this stuff. I've been around WordPress a long time. So I started blogging in 2000 on Movable Type. If anybody remembers Movable Type, Tracy does.
I had one. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. So I started blogging on Movable Type, and first I just started blogging, and then I wanted my blog to look cool. So I started doing templates for Movable Type, and really was kind of good at it. Like, I was understanding the Movable Type templates and all of that non-dynamic static publishing that was going on with Movable Type at the time. So I think it was like around 2003, 2004. Well, 2003 is when WordPress came out. So it must have been like 2004 when Movable Type changed its licensing.
It was 2004.
Was it four? Mm-hmm. All right. I don't remember what they changed it to or from now anymore. I just remember that people like me, who is just blogging for fun and hobby, all of a sudden we're going to have to pay a license. So I had a friend of mine who said, you know, have you heard of WordPress? And I'm like, no, I haven't. Well, you should give it a try. And so I did, and haven't looked back since then. Migrated my blog over to WordPress from Movable Type, and started blogging on WordPress, started doing templates, themes, and then started doing them for friends, and then started doing them for work, for pay. So that's how I got my start.
I love it. You say you're dating yourself. Actually, my first blog was on B2.
Wow.
So I get that. And I did. Yeah, I remember that Movable Type, and I was kind of fumbling around with it, and then they started charging, and then I went over into WordPress. So all of my WordPress stuff is in 04. And yeah, when did you start? Because you basically, you wrote the book about WordPress.
I have written a book about WordPress.
You've written some stuff about WordPress. When did you start, and how did you get into the publishing portion?
So that's a fun story. It was like one of my favorite stories in my whole career is, I'd mentioned that I started doing WordPress themes and templates and stuff for friends, and then started doing it for pay sometime around, it was in 2005 that I left my career. I used to be a registered nurse, and I was for 12 years. The blogging thing was a hobby, and the design thing kind of came natural to me. I'm completely self-taught, and self-taught in front-end development. So that's what I did to kind of de-stress after my shifts. Like, just a little front-end development to de-stress yourself after.
You know, just for fun.
Yes.
Yep.
That will tell you how stressful my day job was at the time. So I kind of became known in smaller circles, you know, like political blogging, mommy blogging, as kind of a go-to to get a quick template done. I think I was doing like full blown templates at that time for like $75. Yeah, it's cute. And somebody was putting together a panel, a friend of mine, Susie Gardner, was putting together a panel for South by Southwest. And the title of the panel was, Can You Make Money Designing Blogs? And they wanted a sort of multidimensional panel. So we had somebody from Expression Engine and somebody representing Movable Type and somebody representing TypePad. And they needed a WordPress person to represent, like, can you make money designing WordPress blogs? And Susie was like, you're the only person I know who does this right now. So do you want to? That was actually my very first public speaking engagement as a WordPress tech design person. So nothing, no pressure, just
no, just speaking the largest stage. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, speaking at South by, no big deal. I was petrified. I was petrified. So in the audience was a representative from John and Wiley and Sons, who are the publishing house behind all of the Dummies series. So there's like a For Dummies book for every single thing out there. It's like a For Dummies, like baking cookies for dummies and gardening for dummies and investing for dummies. Like there's a For Dummies book for everything. And they came to South by specifically to find somebody to write WordPress for Dummies. And they saw this panel on the schedule. They decided to go to it. And they're like, oh, you're the WordPress person. I want to talk to you. And that's where I got my book deal. It was in 2006 at South by Southwest.
Love it.
Yeah.
Wow.
I love it. Right. The first time I think I remember, seeing you in person or whatever, I was speaking at my first WordCamp in Milwaukee. I don't even know how long ago it was. And I was competing against you, my first session. And I was in the next room and I was like, I don't think anyone's going to come to my talk because the person who wrote the book is talking right next to like, everyone go over there. But then we ended up being really loud. And then we just had a competition on who could laugh the loudest.
I remember you being really loud. Like on purpose, you were really loud.
Well, after you all, I heard the cheer, the roar. I was like, okay, now it's a competition.
Now this has gotten real.
Oh my goodness,
Tracy, I have fond memories of just not seeing you at all through the year, and then just randomly running into you at South by Southwest. It seemed like we always did. Like we always ran into each other at the convention center, or it was like, Tracy,
you didn't realize that we lived in the same state, but we would always, I had the same thing. I had another friend who lived like down the street. And the only time I saw him was at South by Southwest in Austin or other, like across the country.
Yeah, exactly.
Every time.
And every time we would see each other, it would be like, you know, we should get together back home.
Yeah.
That would seem to make more sense.
Well, one of these days we'll make that happen.
So before you wrote the book on WordPress and you were just a blogger, what were you blogging about?
A variety of things. I'm very into politics.
Me too.
So I was, I get that. I got that from, where's your calendar? Can we see it on the podcast?
My countdown calendar.
There it is.
If you're not watching the video, you don't get to see it. But yes, this is my countdown to inauguration calendar that I have been marking off X's every day.
Yes, we're very excited about tomorrow. So I'm, you know, I always think that in another lifetime, I might have been like a White House correspondent or some type of political journalist because I really dig it. So I was blogging politics back then. And then I was also blogging about nursing because that was my career at the time. I was a home care and hospice nurse. So when I talk about like the level of stress that my day job brought, like I was literally dealing with terminal patients all day long. So I was blogging a lot about my experiences with that. So really not anything tech. I really wasn't into anything tech, except I liked to tinker with the software that I was using to make it all happen.
I did a little home healthcare. I was a home healthcare scheduler. So I went from being a home health aide to doing the scheduling. And so just even the scheduling is super stressful because you got to get all these cases covered.
Yes.
You know, 24/7. Oh,
Yeah, that's not a job I would want for sure.
That was really
I always made good friends with the scheduler. Very, very good friends with the scheduler.
Yeah, because you want to get the slots you want.
Yes.
Yeah. And the hours that I needed. The most stressful job I've ever had.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
saying a lot considering how stressful web dev is. But are you feeling, having been a former nurse, it's like your level of empathy and compassion during this COVID times peaked? And how have you been feeling about that?
I think that, you know, it's funny because we do an annual retreat at WebDev Studios, except last year we didn't do one, probably not going to be doing one this year. But the last one that we did, we do these lightning talks. Like we do a lot of like learning and knowledge share at these events, but then we do these lightning talks where it's like you can do your lightning talk, but it has to be on anything but web development. It needs to be something personal. It needs to be something that means something to you, or you could teach some. So we had people that were like teaching us how to make maple syrup from a tree, you know, and people that would talk about, you know, 10 steps to raising teenagers, you know, kind of things like that. So I did a talk at the last one that was my lightning talk that was the top 10 things that I brought from nursing into my web development career. And I always used to joke about like, who doesn't need a nurse who can code a WordPress theme? You know, it's very niche. I think I've got that avenue covered in this industry. But really there's a lot that once I started thinking about it that I brought over, and empathy in technology is a big deal to me. And empathy in leading people, which is a lot of what I do at WebDev, is very, very important to me. So I think that the lessons in empathy that I got from my years in nursing really helped me to become sort of the person I am today, the leader that I am today and in my company. And with COVID, you know, when we started finding out, I think it was like February, late February, I took my last trip down to Austin, Texas, and we started locking down. And of course, our employees were very much like, oh my God, what's this going to mean? Am I going to have a job next week? Am I going to, you know, are our clients going to shut down? And I think that sort of that crisis management, even though it wasn't really, I mean, it was crisis for us, for them. But my crisis management from nursing, just those experiences just kind of kicked in, and you try to become the calm person. You know, you try to be very realistic and talk to people about, you know, we don't know what we don't know, but here's what we do know, and that's how we're going to handle this. And we'll take it as we come. And I think the most important thing when you're leading a group of people like that is to really try and project and put yourself in their position. You know, I'm older. My children are older. I have grandchildren. Two of them.
Me too. I have a grandchild.
Okay,
have
so then
many,
you know,
grandchildren,
I am not the person who has young children at home. You know, I'm very fortunate in this pandemic that I don't have young children at home at all. But I have very many employees who do have young children at home. So then it became, what do we need to do for those people so that they can deal with this? We are normally a 9-to-5 company, but now we need to change and we need to be flexible and, you know, just kind of all of those sort of empathetic traits that you just really need to put yourself in people's shoes, understand what they're dealing with, what they're having to go through, how that affects the work that we're doing, and what adjustments do we need to make as a company to help them be successful and calm and just less stressed and decreased anxiety and all of those things. So
I think that's really like that's huge. And I think, I mean, because you were already a distributed agency,
yes,
correct? So like you had the tools in place.
Right.
It was just a matter of figuring out those processes. And I have been a part of distributed agencies that have good processes. And then I have had what experiences with a not so good processes. And the difference as an employee in those situations, like I, you know, it's really great to hear because that is something that has been a big issue of like, oh, well, all these things are changing now. How does this now? I'm worried about this, that empathy that you can bring into there. I think that's amazing. How has the, well, I have a twofold. First off, because you had taught yourself. So you just like, how did you go from that into owning a successful business and like having employees and kind of what things have you found that have really worked and you probably stick with from what you've learned during the days of COVID?
Whew. All right. Well, we'll start with the first one. So yes, I am self-taught and everything that the foundation of my learning came from Microsoft Front Page. That's how I learned HTML. I'm not embarrassed to admit that. It would be embarrassing if I still used Microsoft Front Page. That's how I learned, you know, just your basic HTML markup. And I can remember when I was going from movable type to WordPress, I used to do movable type designs in tables in Front Page. Okay.
Well, nested tables were like the thing.
Yes.
Oh yeah. 100%.
But then I needed to learn CSS. It became very clear that I needed to learn CSS and abandon tables. And that was super painful for me, but I bought a couple of books and read a couple of resources and just learned it. You know, I just learned it. And it was cool because, you know, you'd learn a new thing. You'd be like, oh my God, I can stick the footer to the bottom of the page with this div. This is amazing. And float left and float. I mean, just simple concepts back then. So, you know, I just constantly learning. I always used to say that I'm constantly in college. I'm constantly in school. And that's still true because I still take courses on JavaScript mostly because JavaScript was one of the areas that I did not bother to teach myself in those years because JavaScript really, I mean, I knew like some of the
JavaScript. JavaScript's mean. It's mean. We have a hate relationship.
It bites.
I mean, had my head literally.
I mean, I don't mean it bites in that it sucks. It literally bites like it.
Yeah.
It sinks its mm-hmm. teeth in and it hurts. And
I'm really good at hiring people to write JavaScript for me. That's a strong suit of mine.
That's half the battle. So I started my own small freelance agency. I called it eWebscapes, which was kind of like landscaping for the web. So it was like eWebscapes and everything back then was e-something. So eWebscapes, and there I just did a lot of work for mommy bloggers and political blogs, just kind of the circles that I ran in. And I was doing that for a very long time from like 2004-ish, 2005, up until 2012 when I merged eWebscapes with Web Dev Studios. By the time I merged with Web Dev Studios, I wasn't doing mommy blogs anymore. I was starting to do corporate enterprise work and I was in over my head. Sometimes I was in over the head with the type of work that was needed and sometimes in over my head with the amount of work that I was needing to do. So for the type of work, I'm a front end dev, pure and simple, and I'm a designer. And I can hack together some of the more advanced level development requirements that my clients needed by, you know, cutting and pasting from Stack Overflow and all of that kind of stuff. But when things got over my head, advanced API integrations or like a high level migration that wasn't straightforward, I would hire Web Dev Studios to do the work for me. So I got to know Brad and Brian Messenlehner at the time, you know, through that. And then one time at WordCamp Chicago, I walked up to Brad and I said, I'm drowning like in work. And Christmas morning, I'm sitting on the couch with my laptop coding and my children are opening presents trying to get my attention. And that was a real eye opener for me because this is not sustainable anymore. Mm-hmm. Brad, I noticed that your website's really super ugly. You don't have designer on staff, do you? And he didn't. Like, they were a development group. They didn't do any design, and it showed. And I've said this to his face before numerous times, so he won't get too upset with me for mentioning it. But we decided that, you know, my design background, a lot of my design clients coupled with their development work that they were doing kind of made sense. So we merged in 2012. WebDev was a 12 person agency at the time, and now we're pushing 50 in 2021. So
that's amazing.
What was the second question?
Oh, just because like, I can imagine like, yeah, getting, because I felt like, okay, well, as a business owner, I gained my footing, I hit my stride, and then COVID hit, and there's a lot of things that kind of had to unlearn, relearn, or adapt. And for fellow business owners and, you know, people that, you know, do work in the tech industry, how have you found that, how have you found success through that? And what have you, like, what have had to change and those kinds of things?
So surprisingly, and not so surprisingly, actually, when I talk to agencies that are about our size or larger, I found that most of us have had a pretty decent year. Mm-hmm. Because people are on the web.
Yep.
Right. And WebDev has had a very, very good year because of the type of clientele we have and that we're lucky to have. We do a lot of media, a lot of news, and a lot of consumer packaged goods, which is like Campbell's
big
Soup
right
is
now.
One of our clients, right? Nice. So they had a really good year. So when we have clients who are having a good year, mm-hmm. we tend to have a good year as well. So it was surprising. But when I do go back to those early days of the pandemic shutting down, we didn't know what was going to happen. So immediately Brad and I kind of put some limits on our spending. We suspended some benefits for employees that one of the benefits that we did sort of suspend was we do Hey Taco. You guys familiar with that? So Hey Taco is a way to give kudos to coworkers and allow us to give kudos to employees, and you collect tacos and you can redeem those tacos for awards like Amazon gift certificates or this, that, or the other thing. So we did put limits on that because we just didn't know what was going to happen with the pandemic. So it's like, let's take what we can and sort of slash our expenses for now. So what we allowed them to do was we allowed them to bank their tacos. Like, you can keep giving and collecting tacos. You just can't redeem them until we're pretty sure we're going to be on steady footing, things like that. And then we started looking at avenues of revenue that we never really looked at before. We have Maintain, which is our sort of WordPress maintenance and support division of WebDev. They started offering hosting through reselling with Flywheel. And they also started doing small business design, where some of the, you know, WebDev does a lot of enterprise work, but we don't do like mom and pop shops or small e-commerce builds or things like that. So Maintain started doing SMB because we thought, you know, different avenues of revenue. We don't know where we're going to end up with this pandemic, so let's do what we can, right? And that's turned into be a nice little sort of alley of revenue for us that we wouldn't have considered before that we'll hang on to post pandemic. So yeah.
Nice. How has it been for you making that transition from being that freelancer and kind of, controlling yourself and what you do to then maybe having to pull back and direct other people? And I can imagine for me, I would just be like, no, let me do it. but to manage people is quite a thing. And I'm so curious about how you could make that shift to being a director.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I was a nurse, for a lot of my career, I was a director of nursing. So at one point I was the director of nursing for a hospital and I had like 200 employees. of all different disciplines. So nurses, LPNs, nursing assistants, and then all of the therapy departments fell underneath me too, which didn't make any sense, but physical therapy, occupational health, speech therapy. So I had a lot of experience managing people and just kind of being that sort of director figurehead. So when I talk about things that I brought with me from my nursing career, the leadership skills and experience that I learned then apply very much to what I do today, because it seems not to, I don't want to say it doesn't matter the type of work that we're doing, but it doesn't. When you're leading and managing people, the priorities are still the same. People want to get paid, right? Mm-hmm. That's number one. People want benefits. They want a decent benefits package. So you need to work towards a benefits package that is attractive to people. People don't want to get burnt out. They don't want to work overtime. They don't want to be forced to work overtime. These are things that are universal, and it doesn't matter if you're working at the hospital or a web dev company or McDonald's. So I have a very sort of pragmatic approach to leadership, and that if you really help your employees take care of those basics and remove as many stressors as you can from their life, then not only will they achieve great things with you, but they'll be happy to do it, I think. I'm pretty sure.
So it sounded like it was comfortable for you. And it was, so you didn't feel like you had to be doing the doing anymore. In terms of building sites and actually
coding.
That's
not entirely true either, because like when I joined WebDev, there were 12 people, and I was bringing design to a company that was development. So I really had to build up the design and the front end development piece of the company.
Yeah.
So that meant probably the first year or two, I was still committing code. I was still doing mockups. I was still doing those things until I could like hire people on. And then as I hired people on, then I would kind of step back a little bit more. I think by the time I stepped back completely, I was ready. I was ready to step back.
Oh yeah, that's good to know that you kind of have to be willing to let it go too.
Yes.
For that to happen, for that to
you
evolve
absolutely.
Well.
Yeah. And you need people around you that you trust. And that's the key to letting go, is trusting the people, their skills, their experience, their creativity, trusting them to do as good, if not better job than you would have done. So
yes.
Yeah, I definitely have trust issues. And so I think that would be hard for me.
Yeah, same. So how many different editions of the book have you?
So on January 7th, and I didn't make like a big deal out of this. Normally I would like be all over social media talking about it, but it was January 7th, the day after January 6th. And it just didn't seem right or important for me to promote it. So I waited until I came onto your show.
Oh, well,
so the ninth edition of WordPress for Dummies was released on January 7th.
That's spectacular.
Yeah, I've done 9 editions of those. And then I've got another book called WordPress All-in-One, which is a 948-page book about WordPress. That's in its fourth edition.
Wow.
And then I have another one called WordPress Web Design that's in its third edition.
So how do you keep up with all the updates in order to keep the book's content up to date?
I have a bat phone in Matt Mullenweg's office.
I love it.
I just put up the WordPress signal and he calls. No, I'm kidding.
I was wondering about that too, because I remember after like years of having all these, you know, my HTML and CSS and, you know, whatever books I had, and I'm looking at these, I'm like, I'm never looking at these again. They're so old and out of date. And so I just ended up taking to Goodwill, which, I mean, nobody wanted those old books anyway. So, you know, now that you've got one that's being updated so frequently, how do you keep up with that?
There's a huge challenge in writing a static book on such a dynamic piece of software.
Yes.
And I did have to sort of resolve within myself that my book is probably going to be outdated. My book is already outdated. The January 7th edition is already outdated. And that is just the reality of it. But if you think of the audience of my book, they are new users. So they're not us. You know, they're not people who are digging into the code. They're not people who are trying to build their own templates. They may eventually get there. And I do touch on that stuff in the book. But the book is primarily for how do I get into WordPress and start publishing content? How do I organize that content by using menus and categories mm-hmm. and tags? And how do I put things in the sidebar and the footer using widgets? And what are themes and how do I use those? And what are plugins and how do I use those? So it's really a new user book, not a book for advanced people or even intermediate people. So if you think about today or January 7th when the book was published, it does have all of the stuff up until, I want to say Christmas of 2020, because mm-hmm. that's when I stopped writing it and then it was published on January 7th. So it's got all the good stuff, all the foundation. And I would say 95% of what new users need are in there. And some of the newer stuff that gets like kind of thrown in these point releases, new users sometimes don't like even get that far. So this book teaches them how to use Gutenberg, how to use all the different Gutenberg blocks to put together different types of pages and all of that. So, you know, it is hard to keep up with what's going on with WordPress, but thankfully I've got a very smart team of people at Web Dev Studios who help me, you know, keep up with what's going on. I'm constantly updating my local with, you know, bleeding edge releases so that I can dig in. I follow all the, you know, normal important people like Helen on Twitter. You know, I keep track of what's going on in track and the make.wordpress. I'm just kind of all over the place, just sort of looking at what, you know, they're publishing over at WP Tavern and what post status is having to say about new releases. And I'm in the post status Slack channel. So it's like whenever I hear something that's like, ooh, this is going to be in the next release, I jot it down in a notebook because I'm a pen and paper person. And then do my research on it before I write about it. So
that's impressive just because like, I mean, I the amount of Slack channels just alone that I'm in, I can't keep up with them. And you know, that amount of communication, I know for me personally, I can't do that and my job and whatever. So like how much, what percentage of your brain power ends up being like book related versus, you know, company related?
So a book like this 9th edition, they give me 4 months to write it. Mm-hmm. Now, if I really wanted to, I could probably update like from the 8th to the 9th edition, maybe in 2 months if I worked full time at it. But because I don't have full time to work at it, I usually reserve weekends to work on my book. And some weeknights. And usually when I'm in the thick of it, like I've got a deadline this week, I just tell Brad, you know, I'm out this week. Like, and being the owner of a company gives me the flexibility and the opportunity to do that, which is nice. It really depends on the update. So Wiley has me updating it every roughly 15 to 18 months on sort of that cycle. And it depends on what has happened in WordPress in between the time that I last released and now. It could be a very, could be a simple release, a simple update to where I'm just going through and like refreshing all of the screenshots that are in the book so that it looks like the current WordPress dashboard. Or it could be something like this 9th edition where I had to gut out the entire post editor and add in all of this block editor stuff. I think my biggest, the biggest one was, I think, 3.0, I want to say, when, you know, we got the new menu system in and multi-site was now in core. It used to be like the the earlier editions of the book handled multi-site as MU and WordPress. Yeah. And now it's like integrated in Core. So I had to make that change. So there are sometimes during the course of the last 14 years that I've been writing this, that the updates have been easy. And there are sometimes where the updates, I just want to pull my hair out. So sounds about right. I'm just being honest. But I like doing it. I mean, I really like doing it. Otherwise, I wouldn't be. You know, every time they want to do a new update, my contract says I've got right of first refusal. So they come to me first. Do you want to do the update? I can say yes or no. If I say no, then they have to search for a new author.
But I was going to ask if they'd ever, if you'd ever considered not doing it.
You know, yes. Yes. But then I think about it and I'm like, it's mine though. Like, you know, it's been so much a part of me and my career. And it's so much a part of, like, everybody knows that I write the book for dummies that I'm not sure that I wonder if I would like let it go, if people would still refer to me as the WordPress for Dummies author.
Probably, I think so.
These are things I worry about when I'm falling asleep at night.
Well, and you
like,
know,
I have nothing else to offer in my career except a book for dummies.
Well, and then with the person that takes it over, you know, and they're like always referring to that person as the replacement or the new
person.
They just
need to change their name to Lisa Sabin Wilson.
Right.
You just need a ghostwriter.
Yeah.
So it's like the Doctor Who. So it just takes over the next.
Right, right. Writer.
Yeah, you regenerate. Yeah. That's what.
I want to make sure we have time because we're getting close to our time to ask you, of course, because we're the Women in WP podcast, about your experience as a woman developer so people can hear about that, because we're probably about the same age, or and you know, we came of age in software in the late 80s and 90s, and it was a different scene, and it's changed a lot, and how it's, yeah, it's amazing how much it's changed, and I'm very, very grateful. But tell us how that evolved for you. And why you would be on a podcast like this, you know?
Yeah. You know, I've actually been thinking about this very topic ever since I knew that I was coming onto this podcast, because I wanted to give like a super intelligent, inspiring answer. But I can only give you my answer, right? Whether it's inspiring or not. I am older. Like I'm going to be 53 years old in April, and I am not at all shy about saying that. I think that when I was growing up, when I was a kid, my mom, you know, from a different generation, women should be seen, not heard. Women should be grateful for where we are in life. Feminism is bad. Gloria Steinem is the devil. This is how I grew up. Right. And this probably isn't unlike many people my age, many women my age, in thinking back to their childhood on how they grew up. And as I grew into adulthood, you know, the echoes of your parents just kind of linger in your mind. I kind of kept to myself when I was emerging in tech and was just very grateful and thankful for the things that I was able to achieve and the things that I was able to do. And I think it was this younger generation of women that really started saying, we're not going to apologize for being here, and we're not going to stay quiet for God's sake, and we're not going to accept the status quo. That really started inspiring me. And I think when I look back on earlier in my career, as I was emerging and getting the opportunities that I was getting at South By and the book, I wish I would have had the wherewithal and the state of mind to turn around to women around me and bring them with me. You know, but I was just so like grateful, I guess, at the time. And then that mindset sort of grew into a
mine too.
Not wanting to, I don't even know how to put this. Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She is like my idol. And she was once asked, how many women do you think need to be on the Supreme Court or something like that? Or how many women are enough on the Supreme Court or whatever? Or when will you be happy with the amount of women? I don't know what the question was, but her answer was when there's nine. Nobody's ever questioned the fact that there's nine white guys on the Supreme Court. Why would anybody question? Like, I went through this stage where I felt like I don't want women in tech being the 500-pound gorilla in the room. I just want it to be status quo. I want it to be normal to be a woman in tech. You know, I just want it to be normal. And for me, it kind of was normal, but I kind of felt like that was because I was sort of keeping just to myself and doing my thing and really not getting involved. And if I had it to do over again, I would probably get more involved in that sort of movement of really encouraging women and helping women. And I realize it's never too late to do those things because I try to do that now as much as possible. And I'm just really inspired. I really am inspired by the younger generation. And I think that it is our obligation as older people, as the adults in the room, I don't know, let's just call us old people, to take our cues from the younger generation, because progress is what it's all about. And the years and era of my mother's, you know, women should be seen, not heard, are just so crazy out there that I can't even imagine thinking in that way. So I think that my experiences as a woman in tech have been pretty mild. I haven't had a lot of the struggles, but again, I think it's because I kept to myself. I was a freelancer, pretty much kept to myself. And then when I joined web dev, I was kind of like a bull in a china shop. Like, don't even question that I'm a woman in tech, because if you do, you're going to get an earful. Like, I am a woman in tech. It is just what it is. And it is what it should be everywhere. So I think people were mostly afraid to even broach the topic with me.
I love it.
So I kind of have run the gambit of the whole spectrum of just women in society in general. And I am where I am right now because the younger generation has inspired me so much. God, that was a lot of yapping, but I hope I made it.
No, that was good. It's funny because you're perfect. Talking about, like, even just how, even after all of this years of experience, you still kind of go at, you know, with the company, like learning from others. And I think that's how we continue to grow, as even though we are the, apparently we're the adults in the room. I don't know. I still look for the adult to ask if permission for things, but I'm like, why did they leave me alone? Oh, that's right. I'm the adult. But in that attitude of, I am always learning and I am having that, and you absorb that. I think that's really key, even with many, many years of experience. So yeah, it's great. And I am thankful that you were there to kind of blaze that path. So,
well, I mean, I don't know what would have happened to you if I wasn't next door to you.
I don't know either. I don't know. Who wouldn't have?
Where would you be today,
Tracy? Where would I be today? I have no idea.
Oh, man.
Well, it's been amazing having you on today. Before we go, can you tell everybody where they can find you online?
Yes, I am on Twitter, Lisa Sabin Wilson, all one word, no dashes, and webdevstudios.com. I have a blog at lisasabin-wilson.com, but I rarely blog over there. So,
all right. Well,
thank you
for
so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me. This was fun.
Thank you for listening. Interested in being on the show? Sign up on our website, womeninwp.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and join our Facebook group to have conversations with other women in WordPress.